You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard. You are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Icarus FC. It is Thursday, August 13th, 2020. It will be a solo show this week. Just me, Rachel, and Dan had some other things going on, and we just had too many scheduling conflicts to where we weren't able to get it, having multiple of us available to podcast at the same time this week. So it will be just me. It will be relatively brief. I will be putting a bow on the MLS back tournament. The MLS back final took place on Tuesday. Portland Timbers, the champions, defeating Orlando City SC by a score of 2-1. Portland Timbers hoisting their second major trophy in their MLS existence. We've got some NWSL news, and I'll be looking ahead to MLS being back, in that the MLS regular season has already resumed with Nashville SC and FC Dallas playing a game yesterday at time of recording, and most of the teams in MLS will be back in action the weekend of August 22nd. But we will start with the news of the week in the NWSL. Racing Louisville FC has appointed their first ever head coach. His name is Christy Holly. He was born in the UK, played college soccer in the UK, or say college football, excuse me, and then spent a number of years with the Sky Blue FC organization, including being the head coach for two seasons during not the most tranquil times from a ownership and a management standpoint for Sky Blue, but he has experience in American soccer at the coaching ranks in the university level. He knows the NWSL. There was a bit of a not kerfuffle, but people kind of with raised eyebrows. Christy Holly is the fiance of Christy Pierce, a veteran center back who is connected to the ownership group with Racing Louisville. So a little bit of a wondering of if there's incest in terms of this actual appointment, but a lot more stuff has to go on for Racing Louisville. We're still not sure what kind of club they're going to be from a spending standpoint. They've got a really good brand with what's been done with Louisville City FC. I guess their brother organization obviously have a fantastic stadium situation, and that club was very successful from the get-go from their time in the USL. So so this isn't the final piece. This is a piece of, in terms of a head coach being appointed that obviously the organization has some familiarity with through Christy Pierce knowing him. I hesitate to give praise or give judgment on Racing Louisville. We still see what they have to do in terms of the NWSL market opening up for international opportunities for players, and also just what they're going to be from a style of play standpoint and other players within the NWSL and the current college ranks that they're going to pursue. So Racing Louisville has a head coach. It is not the final piece. It is not the most critical piece of their puzzle, and we'll see what happens with them further. Then let's get to the big news of the week. We have a winner in the MLS is back tournament. As I said earlier, Portland Timbers defeated Orlando City SC, and this was about what I would have expected from Orlando and Portland, with Portland winning in terms of them establishing their style of play. It was a bit unorthodox in that it was the two center backs who scored the goals, both on set pieces for the Timbers. Laris Mabiala heads a ball down off the turf and then off of the glove of Pedro Gallese of Orlando City into the back of the net, or top of the net, in the 27th minute. That was on a set piece set up by Diego Valeri. Pereira scores the goal set up by Nani, though on the box score at MLSsoccer.com, he's not listed as having an assist, which I think is curious, but that was one of the few really good sequences where Nani was able to get the ball, actually get into space, and do anything. The Timbers did a bang-up job in terms of frustrating the Orlando playmaker and the Orlando goal scorer, not letting him get really on the ball, lots of chippy fouls. fouls. There was a bit of an incident off the ball on the sideline between him and Jorge Villafania in the second half that did get Nani a yellow card. Some cynical play acting from Villafania, if you ask me personally. But in any case, we were tied at halftime. And then Dario Šupić gets his first goal ever with the Portland Timbers off of a corner. It gets sent out a little bit to Eric Williamson, who chests it down. He shoots it goal, and then probably a touch that from Jeremy Bobesy to Šupić that I'm not sure how much he knew about it, and then Šupić with just a touch. So a double deflection right in front of goal onside to get the winner in the 66th minute. But on the whole, the 90 minutes, and on the whole of chance creation, I would say that the Timbers are deserving champions in this tournament and in this game. They made Orlando play their game. We talked about it last time where these two styles were somewhat complementary and that Orlando wanted the ball. They wanted to move it from side to side and Portland wanted to sit back in a mid block. They wanted to frustrate the opponent in their final third, be very compact and then spring on the counter and either create chances on that counter or associated with it. Set pieces, corners, second balls, etc. And ultimately, this was just about which team was going to be able to execute their game. And once that first goal happened, how did it change the game and how did both teams react? And so for the whole of this, I would say certainly once the Timbers went up and certainly once the Timbers scored to make it 2-1, Orlando was chasing the game. They were chasing the game after Mabialis opens the scoring in the 27th minute. They were chasing the game through the whole of the second half. The Timbers looked like the veteran savvy. We've been in a knockout tournament. We've won an MLS Cup before. We've been to an MLS Cup and lost as the underdog, knowing how to frustrate opponents, how to manage games, how to manage their mentality and their emotions, and ultimately just drive the opponents crazy. And we saw that from the Portland Timbers on a whole. We certainly saw it from Sebastian Blanco and Diego Trau with some of his dark arts that he pulled off, especially in that first half where he caught a little bit of an elbow, I believe on, I don't know if it was Nani, I think it was on an Orlando player, that he got called for a foul but then wasn't given a yellow card that I thought was deserving a yellow card at least. And ultimately they were able to frustrate Nani. They didn't give any space to Chris Mueller, not that he got into any super creative opportunities. And while Ruan got up the field, once he got into the final third, he wasn't able to create anything. So both teams in general set up in the general shape that they wanted to do. They generally got the ball into the areas that they wanted to do, but ultimately it was about execution. And the Portland Timbers executed their game plan that we've seen in the Giovanni Savarese era, we've seen in this tournament, to a T. And so I think certainly congratulations to them. They deserved it. As I've talked about earlier on this show, I still have concerns about the Portland Timbers in what this would look like over the course of a 34-game season. They did outperform the X goals in the analytics to Orlando City SC. Orlando had an XG of 1.37. And then Portland had an XG of this game of 1.36. So roughly even, I guess, on the, you know, on the average, if this game was played out, you know, 1,000 times, you would have gotten, you know, 0.01 more goals per game from Orlando City than you would have from Portland, in the 90 minutes. And so that was a little bit consistent that we've seen Portland, outperform their chance creation and just be extremely clinical and find different players who are able to score goals in different ways, whether it's counterattack, set pieces, creating penalties, etc., and them just being extremely pragmatic and frustrating the opponent and winning on the day. And while that's great for tournament soccer, where you're only playing, you know, 3 group stage games and 4 knockout stage games, that's not something that I think you can count on. Just the numbers, the underlying numbers suggest you can't rely on that with a larger sample size. So, and that's consistent with what we've seen from the Timbers over the course of 34 game seasons under Giovanni, where, you know, they'll have 7 or 8 games where they'll be undefeated, they'll win 4 or 5 games in a row at home, they look like world beaters and look like they could contend for a supporter shield, and then they'll have another 10 games where they only win 1 game, they get a couple draws, and they look like a team that shouldn't even be in the playoffs. So my curiosity about this team is, are they going to ride this momentum in the remaining 18 games that we have in this regular season, or at some point are they going to cool off? Is this a team that is going to regress to the mean where they have been performing above expectations and above what the analytics would suggest on the whole of this tournament. For Orlando, this is certainly disappointing, but I think at this point, you know, if they make the playoffs this year with what they did in this tournament and they get a win in one of their games they played against Atlanta, then I think we can officially put to rest the Orlando joke about this team. We saw they've just taken on the DNA of Oscar Perea, and Oscar Perea is finally on a team that has a lot of talent, has a South American flair, has an ownership group that's willing to spend a little bit more money, and a team that ultimately has the heartbeat and the attention of the city that brings just more buzz, more intensity, a better crowd atmosphere, not that we saw it in this tournament, and ultimately better revenue for this team. He had the academy structure that he wanted at FC Dallas. They weren't always able to spend the money, and they were certainly a club that was about developing players and then selling them at a price point that was viable for the ownership group. Orlando City as an organization is willing to spend money. They brought in Nani. They've held on to Chris Mueller. They've added a couple really good options. They are a club and a city that I think is more attractive to the Central and South American and Caribbean talent that Oscar Perea would have connections in, to where they'd be able to get bargain deals and guys that nobody else has ever heard of. And they're an organization that's willing to spend more because they're finally in win-now mode. He took the job at Colorado Rapids, his first head coaching job in MLS, and that was a rebuild. He didn't complete that rebuild because the opportunity came up at FC Dallas. I think you could argue that he achieved what he wanted to because they did win that double a couple of years ago when they won the Supporters Shield and then won the Open Cup, but they never won MLS Cup. They never got to an MLS Cup final, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm not even sure, they might have made one Western Conference Finals, if that, during his entire tenure. So he's finally on a team where there is that youth talent. He hasn't even begun to sow the seeds from what's going on with the Orlando City Academy. This is a team that has drafted young talent well. This is a team that plays with a very South American style flavor that fits the mold of what he wants. This is a front office that is definitely win now, and we're going to spend money now. And they finally have a match winner who I think is happy and is rejuvenated in what Nani has been for them, coming from Manchester United when they were kind of, you know, at one of their low points relative for his time at Old Trafford, to you know, a club where I think he feels revitalized. He is around, he is the alpha on a team that is trying to win, and he's ultimately happy and being able to play at his best. So I'm really excited to see what Orlando City is able to do. I don't think losing taints any of that. You know, this would have been the cherry on the top from a tournament standpoint, but now at this point, this is proof of concept of what Oscar Bray has done in terms of taking over the narrative of this club. At this point, the goal should be make the playoffs, try and do something in the playoffs, get your first ever win against Atlanta, and then set yourself up for long-term success with the youth, you know, not TAM players, because TAM, it doesn't really exist in MLS anymore, but in terms of setting up with the young talent that you're investing in abroad, the players that you're able to draft, and then ultimately setting things up from the academy while still spending relatively high at the top with your three designated players and your other big stars. And that's something that I think absolutely fits the team as constructed right now. It's something that absolutely fits Oscar Perea right now. They've certainly established a style of play and identity that can be successful in MLS. At this point, they just need to go out and execute it. They weren't able to execute it against the Portland Timbers. Maybe this will be a lesson learned when they've got to win a game at Atlanta, and maybe Joseph Martinez is back and they need to win that game in order to clinch the playoffs. But I think the future is bright for this organization, and I think Oscar Breja has rewritten the expectations, the goals, and just the mood and environment and culture around this club since taking over, and that was highlighted in the MLS is Back tournament. Let's move forward to what the rest of the regular season is going to look like. We've already seen the regular season come out in the form of Nashville and FC Dallas playing a game earlier this week. Yesterday at time of recording, Nashville won that game on a David Akam goal to win that game 1-0. The regular season will be resuming, as we kind of talked about the last couple of weeks. You know, there will be a phase one of about 6 weeks where teams will be playing 9 games, and then there'll be a phase two of about a month and change where teams will be playing another 12 games. So on the whole, there will be a 23-game regular season for the 2020 MLS regular season. The two games that everybody played back in March in the before times, or February, March in the before times, the three group stage games from the MLS's back tournament, and then now sort of a two-chunked season, two phases of the same regular season, that will be 18 games. There's a little bit of a wonky scheduling setup where Nashville will be playing FC Dallas three times to make up for the three group stage games that those teams did not play because they had to bow out of the tournament. And at least in the first phase, the Canadian teams will only be traveling and playing the other Canadian teams. So Montreal, Impact, Toronto FC, and Vancouver Whitecaps FC will be playing each other such that each team plays nine games in that phase. So, I mean, we kind of already knew with the unbalanced schedule going into this regular season before the pandemic hit that it was going to be an unbalanced schedule, and now it's become even more unbalanced with the Canadian teams not playing each other, or playing each other more and not playing other teams as much. The structure of the MLS's back tournament with the group stage games counting towards the regular season, and now the regionalization of the first phase of play, where teams are mostly going to be traveling close in market. I think the LA Galaxy, for example, do not leave the Pacific time zone in these first nine games that they're playing. The Colorado Rapids, for example, you know, they're playing RSL, Houston. I think they've got a game against San Jose, FC Dallas, Sporting Kansas City, etc. So there's even almost a divisionalization of the conferences in these games that are going to be played. That said, these games are taking place where everybody's traveling on charter. It's charter buses, it's charter flights for the teams that need to fly for their away games, and for the most part, teams will be traveling there and back for the same on the same day for the game. So for example, Nashville played at Dallas. They took a charter flight that morning. They went to a hotel to rest, relax, nap during the middle of the day since they had some time to kill. That was secure in that players were rooming together. They were not leaving their hotel room except to get food that was going to be delivered to them at the front door if they needed that. And they were just leaving the hotel to go to the bus to take them to the stadium, play the game. They were going to change, not shower at the facility, go get back on the bus right after the game as soon as they can, back to the airport, and then take a charter flight home. So this is, I think that's the best scenario you can have. And that's the best procedure you can have and still have teams play in their own market with teams traveling for their road games. And so I've said this on the podcast a couple of different ways in the last couple of months. The solution to, oh, the season shut down, how do we resume the season? How do we finish the season? There are no real good answers. There are only proposals that are varying degrees of bad. And so in that, you're going to make a decision that's going to be bad, or there's going to be areas where it's going to be unfair. And ultimately, what are you going to prioritize to where things are going to be done? Things are going to be prioritized for the good at the sacrifice of other things. And so in that, the league has chosen to prioritize the health and human safety and travel security of the players at the expense of the integrity of the competition in the form of a balanced schedule. There's going to be no more cross-conference play with the exception of the Canadian teams and FC Dallas playing Nashville. There's an expanded playoff format in which now 18 teams will be making the MLS Cup playoffs. Nashville, because of travel and geographic locations, are now in the Eastern Conference. So 10 of 14 teams will make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. 8 of 12 teams will make the playoffs in the Western Conference. So 4 teams in the West, 4 teams in the East will miss the playoffs. 8 total teams of the 26 will miss the playoffs this year in MLS. And so you sacrifice that so that nobody has to travel, so that LA Galaxy doesn't have to fly to New England, so Orlando City doesn't have to fly to Vancouver, so that Montreal doesn't have to travel all the way to the West Coast across borders traveling internationally. And so you sacrifice that in order to make the logistics of travel simpler in ways that it is easy for you to simplify and ultimately prioritize health and human safety. So I am not on the council board of the MLS Supporters Council that oversees the supporter shield, but if I were in that position, I would almost be petitioning for saying, you know, hey guys, do we want to add an asterisk or not even award, just on paper award, but not actually count this year's supporter shield winner, because the regular season's already messed up. It was already an unbalanced schedule. And then on top of that unbalanced schedule, now the season's so messed up that, you know, the a bubble tournament was used for three of the games, and some teams aren't going to be playing each other. And it's even going to be even more regionalized that we can't even count this as valid for a proper regular season champion because of how messed up the regular season is, so that the league can ensure that the players are going to be safe. You know, that's the question that I have. Again, this is the least bad option if you ask me personally. You're welcome to disagree at LWS Matt Pollard at Last Word SC if you disagree or have other comments to say about this. The last thing that I will say, the last thing that I'll say about the schedule with the expanded format that we have, Decision Day is now taking place on November 8th, and we'll have the MLS Cup final on the 12th. So I guess the expanded playoff format, I think, you know, allows some buffers for the, okay, the regular season is truncated in a way that is unfair to this team. We're now allowing more teams into the playoffs, so it's not like somebody's getting shafted for finishing 8th in the regular season. The schedule is somewhat congested. You'll have multiple teams in the league in that phase one, starting August 22nd, playing 3 games in 8 days. And then it's pretty much once we get to phase two with the final 12 games being played, it's pretty much double game weeks. So this is where depth is going to be extremely critical, because young players, your homegrowns, your depth draft picks are really going to have to play out of necessity. And so, you know, what teams are maybe going to sign an extra homegrown? What teams are going to have to rotate their stars? What teams are maybe going to say, okay, we're going to have this star play this game in this game, this DP play this game, so that they don't travel and don't play this game, a road game at all, so they don't have to travel and they're rested for our next home game? Or how much are you going to rotate the squad, given that we're still going to have the 5-sub rule and the 20-man roster, game day roster, for the rest of the regular season? And so I think that's something that's going to be extremely interesting to watch, and where teams that have done a good job building depth is going to be critical, and where some teams that have been very top heavy are going to have to make some difficult decisions, just given how congested the schedule is. But you know, I don't know that there's a better option. I don't think that just with some of the markets that you have, you can have teams playing games deep into December. You know, in hindsight, the idea that Don Garber had of, you know, oh, we're willing to go into, you know, December, January, and February to finish out the 34-game regular season for the 2020 calendar year. And just like, how many Snow Classicos are Minnesota and Montreal and Toronto and Colorado and RSL and Chicago and the Ohio teams gonna have to play in order to make that happen? Is that not logistically infeasible? Never mind the general non-consensus, constantly evolving understanding that we have scientifically about the pandemic, that it somewhat mimics the flu in that it's more mild in the summer and that it gets exacerbated and is stronger in the winter, to the point where we could have, you know, peak, another curve in the winter, to where then the pandemic's so bad that you have to shut down the rest of the league. So I think it was a good move, again, albeit with some complications and some sacrifices made that will be varying degrees of bad, and to some people, unfair, to have it finish out this calendar year and somewhat close calendar-wise to where the MLS regular season would have been, finishing in late October, early November, playoffs in November, MLS Cup sometime in the first half of the month of December. So that does it for, I guess, the last thing that I'll say, since it's breaking news from just earlier today. We officially have a team name and a crest for the St. Louis expansion team. It is St. Louis City SC, the SC standing for soccer club, but then the club's kind of come out and said that they're also willing to have that be Soccer City, as in many ways, St. Louis, Missouri is one of the ancestral homes of the beautiful game here in America. It's kind of a reddish, slightly pinkish red and blue, so very similar to the St. Louis Cardinal colors, kind of a badge similar to a policeman's badge that you'd have. And then they have the arch, and then the other lines that they have representing the rivers, so the Missouri River that runs into the Mississippi, and the Mississippi that obviously divides Illinois from Missouri and that St. Louis sits on. So, you know, I guess I'm, as someone who lived in St. Louis, as someone who started writing for this website in 2014, covering St. Louis FC, the USL team in their first expansion year, I guess this is a nice offshoot from just not keeping the same branding, similar name, and colors from the USL franchise. It's colors that are slightly different from what you have in the rest of the league, which is the different hue of reddish, pinkish, slightly purple, maybe. You know, it's not, you know, it's a little bit boring in that it's St. Louis City. And so when I say city and think about MLS, I'm thinking about New York City FC, to a lesser extent, Orlando City. When I think Sporting Kansas City, I say SKC or Sporting. So even though it has the name Kansas City, because where they play, the name of the town is Kansas City, I don't necessarily think SKC. When I say city, talking to another MLS person, I'd say Sporting. But in any case, you know, it's a little bit different. It's not terrible. It's kind of meh. But given what we've seen with how much the internet, you know, lit up Charlotte FC for their name idea, this isn't the least, this isn't the worst option. It has the arch. There's a lot of fun things that you could do with that, from a dirt jersey design, a logo design, branding, architecture of the stadium, etc. So I kind of like that. We'll see what happens. I generally am okay with it. I don't love it. I want to see the crest. I want to see what else this club does before I make before I render a decision. So I think that does it for us. I will get out of here. I want to thank you for listening to this abbreviated and truncated solo episode of Last Word SC. It's been very 2020 for us folks here. Follow me on Twitter at @LWSMattPollard. I want to thank our sponsors. Firstly, I want to thank Roughneck Scarves. They are an official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. You can get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. They're also doing really cool stuff with neck gaiters and with non-surgical, non-medical masks. If you are looking for an alternative option for uniforms, for soccer jerseys that do not use cookie cutter templates like Nike's and Adidas, if you want a unique and completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, or adult or even pro team, Icarus FC is here to help you create the jersey of your dreams at an affordable price. Their motto is, any design you want, seriously, let them help you design your next custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Follow us on all social media platforms at LastWordSC, LastWordOnSoccer.com for all of our content, written and audio and video. Subscribe, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your podcast. Just search LWS Radio or Last Word on Sports or Last Word SC, and you'll find us and a bunch of other great content from our Last Word family. Listeners, we might not see you next week. We will see you sometime within a few days of the MLS regular season getting back properly. Worst case scenario, the week of August 25th, after the first round of weekend games have been played, as we look forward to MLS being back for real in form of an actual regular season. We'll see you then.